Here for this evening, Sam from San Diego.
Good evening. My name's Sam Leone. I'm a grateful alcoholic. Grateful to be here. I had this crazy thought. I'm going to put my hand on the big book and honestly try to swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God. So whatever comes out of my mouth, hopefully that's the truth, as I see it. Because I want to welcome the newcomers here to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope you find here what we found here. Sobriety, to begin with. It's a good start. And I want to welcome the guy from Chicago in the back, way in the back, whatever he's doing back there. Come on up a little closer there. The Chicago people, man, what are you going to do, right? And good job, Kendall. Glad you're part of this group, being of service. And I want to thank my new friend, Lori, whoever she was supposed to have speaking, canceled. So I said, you know, she goes, can you find somebody real quick? I says, why don't you or I do it? So there you go. And she spoke here last year, she said. So I'm just grateful to be alive and sober. I like to say I've had three lives. And my first life, up to the age of 12, I didn't drink, but I wished I would have, if you know what I mean. I was that restless kid, you know, and living in a household. I was the fourth son, Italian-American family, Catholic. Grew up in Niagara Falls, New York. Well, I didn't grow up. I lived there. You know, I still, you know, that's where I lived. And I had a younger sister, God rest her soul. She passed away at 13 when I was 16. And that household was, till I remember, 5 years old. It was kind of insane, crazy. It was a lot of rage and alcoholism, I don't want to use the word alcoholism because I didn't see a lot of my father drinking a lot there, you know, parties and stuff like that, but not at home too much because he was never home. And my mother genetically had her mother's genetics and suffered from depression, and it wasn't a nice place to be around. And I'm grateful that... I know all this stuff today, but I didn't understand. I didn't understand why somebody would exude that type of behavior and through no fault of their own. So anyway, that's a little bit of genetic history, I like to say. I believe a lot in genetics. For some people, I believe I was born an alcoholic when I took that first drink at the age of 12. And up until that period of time, my story, just in a brief, in a nutshell, I started to develop, I went to Catholic school, and first grade, I had a nun. I don't want to say that. She didn't get none, but you know what I mean. It's kind of stupid. But anyway, my second grade teacher, I hated her with a passion because she embarrassed me pretty bad. She threw me back in first grade just for talking to a young girl next to me. I mean, just stupid, you know. That was my first resentment. And if you're new here, I could have started drinking then. I needed a drink then, but I didn't drink. Because there was no alcohol around available, and I didn't know anything about drinking yet. And I was raised in an environment where, in the neighborhood, my aunt and uncle owned a bar and restaurant. My other aunt and uncle had a liquor store. And we were all in the neighborhood, close. My grandparents lived next door, my mother's side of the family, And it was kind of a just family-oriented type of thing. We would be over each other's houses all the time, big Italian family, you know, partying. And I mean, not partying, you know, having birthday parties and events, grandparents and aunts, and, you know, we're always doing something. And the thing is, with my, the way I felt being in school, you know, kind of, I didn't like being where I was at. I really wished I was not there at the present, especially after that second grade teacher, you know. I didn't want to be in there because she threw me in first grade and kept me there for a couple weeks. Just to say, all that she wanted to say that I was sorry. Sorry. I didn't even, sorry. I didn't even do anything. Why would I apologize for something? They're picking on me. So about the age of, I was in the Cub Scouts, you know. I had three older brothers, and you know, we all kind of did these Cub Scouts and all that. And my one brother, God rest his soul, he's born exactly 2 years older than I. Lori and I, we found out we have the same birthday, the day they landed on the moon. You figure it out. It's coming up. July 20th, if you're not an historian. Like, you know, I can see a few non-historians here in this room. But anyway, I was Cub Scouts. And, you know, like I said, I had three older brothers. We had a basketball court in the back. We had a big, my friend John's laughing at me. Because there's a thing from La Mesa Men's in the old day about me being a basketball player and a nature walker. But that's a different story for some other time. But so in the Cub Scouts, we played softball. And they noticed that my brother was a shortstop, the one who was 2 years older than I. Very agile, very good athlete. And we fought a lot and everything. Won most of the time, but they discovered that I had a talent for pitching, so I was a softball pitcher. And then because I started playing basketball, and I was very good at basketball, I was the only guy in a sixth grade Catholic team to make the eighth grade team. I was very agile, you know, and that, and we had a basket in the backyard, and my cousin, who was a musician, you know, we all had a guitar, and he says, hey, why don't we play the guitar? So I tried to take guitar lesson. I took one lesson, I quit. So let's play basketball. I had no talent for music, but I had good talent for basketball. So I started playing basketball. So sports kind of alleviated some of that anxiety that was experienced, because I didn't want to be in that crazy household, you know. And so that was good. And about the age of about sixth grade, the year I started playing for the Sacred Heart team, we were in a park one day, and my cronies, my young guys, I was like 12, and a guy went to the liquor store to buy us liquor, and I ended up getting blackberry brandy or something like that, and I drank that brandy, whatever it was, and went down and euphoric. I had a feeling come over me. It was wonderful. I was relaxed. I was giggling. I was having a good time. The only problem is I lost all control. I couldn't walk home. I had to be carried home. Now, I was in training for the NBA. I was only 12. You know, my brother used to, one of my brothers used to take all my statistics, how I would play. He coached us and everything. And a few years later, we were playing the championships in Buffalo, all diocesan for Buffalo, and, you know, I'm drinking then, you know. I'm, like, drinking in 7th, 8th grade, smoking cigarettes, you know. And we won the city championship. We won, you know, we were good. We were a real good team, that team. But when we went to the last game, if you know anything about basketball, and I'm kind of, get back. We won the championship, but I didn't make the All-Star team. So that was my second resentment. Right? I got to, you know, because what the reason I didn't make the team is they put a guy on me the whole game. And they played a 2-2 zone. So if you know anything about basketball, you understand they had somebody on me the whole game. So I couldn't score a lot of points, but we won the championship. But, you know, I didn't get the trophy, the MVP. That was no Kawhi Leonard, if you know what I mean. Yay! So anyway, I'm drinking, and then it's time to go to high school. And I don't want to go to high school with all the boys, because I went to, you know, my three older brothers, they went to the all-boys Catholic high school. Cousin Tommy went to that high school, put a plot in there for my cousin, who's also in the program. And I didn't want to go there, because I wanted to go with the guys that are drinking and the girls, and, you know, they're going to the public schools. I didn't want to go to the high school. And but, you know, I just follow my brothers, go to the school, so there I am. And I'm playing basketball in the ninth grade, all-star guard. What happens, I go out for the next year. I'm drinking then, and I took a physical, and found out I had a heart condition. I couldn't no longer play. So I was kind of got a second opinion from my uncle. Tommy's father was a physician, and he says, yeah, you got a heart condition, you shouldn't be playing. So I quit. You know, I couldn't play basketball anymore. So what did I do? Played in the Merles. Played anyways. I was smoking. I was drinking. Let me tell you, I grew up in New York, and there's a lot of New Yorkers here. Back then, in the 60s, the drinking age was 18. So that meant 14. Because my brother, I borrowed his birth certificate, and I started drinking in bars. And then I had to give it back to him. And then my other brother, I borrowed his driver's license when I was 16. He was exactly 2 years older than that. And I, you know, would drink in a bar. But at the age of 16, I was drinking in a bar on a regular basis. And then when I got, I was driver's license at 17. And, and so now it's time to graduate from high school. I got in a lot of trouble in high school. I was in honors for 4 years. They put you in these sections, you know. 1, 2, 3, and 4, I was in section 1. And I was like the juvenile delinquent of the class. Always getting in trouble. Always, I was in detention all the time. You know, they throw you in there. The priest smacked me one time. All that crazy stuff that, you know, you go in those schools. And I didn't like it. And so I had to go to college. And this is during the Vietnam War. And so I was going to go to New York City. And I was going to go to St. John's. That's in New York City. But my three brothers went to Niagara. I'm a mama's boy. I'd never been out of the, you know, so I just went to Niagara. You know, I went to college there. I majored in business. And actually, I majored in business, drinking, and gambling. And probably drinking, business, and gambling in that order, whatever. That's what I did. Drank every night. I was good for about 2 years, you know, no major problems. And about my third year in college, I got engaged. I thought things were going to be okay. My alcoholism was progressing to the point where, you know, I started drinking and driving and getting in trouble. And I knew what the problem was then. It was Niagara Falls. I got to get out of there. You know, it was the weather. So I was at that point. I'd been down to Florida a couple of times during vacation break, and I had friends down there. I says, you know what? I'm going to go to Arizona State. I've never been to Arizona. So my brother got out of the military. We went cross-country, ended up at ASU. I was there for 4 months. I got no credits. I was drunk all the time, drank tequila for the first time in my life. We don't drink tequila in Niagara Falls. I never met a Mexican or a Hispanic person back then. Not where I grew up in that area. And so I didn't know what tequila was, a taco was, nothing, you know, because there's, I mean, I don't know where I'm going with this, but other, you know, it's just kind of, it's kind of like that trivia of, you know, they got a lot of these trivia stuff. So anyway, so drinking. That's all I did, drinking. Drinking and throwing up a lot in teenage years. And then, you know, Dylan read More About Alcoholism. And in More About Alcoholism, it tells different ways I proved that I was not an alcoholic. I read inspirational books. I actually, about 19, I didn't even have a weight problem. My friend says we should drink Rhine wine and soda. You know, it says switching from natural, because, you know, you keep your weight. I didn't even have a weight problem. I tried that. I went from beer, then I was drinking whiskey and water. And then one day, my cousin, my favorite cousin, not Tommy, Tony, my cousin, Tony, my uncle, my favorite uncle I met. He's in a bar, we're in a bar, he says, "Nephew, drink scotch on the rocks." So I'm like 18. So I started drinking Cuddy on the rocks with a twist. He says, "You get more." So I switched from, I'm elevating now, I'm getting to become a big shot drinker, right? I'm like my uncle drinking, you know. And, but, you know, I got drunk on all of that, you know. Switching brands, you know. I took the Geographic, then the Geographic started coming in. Went to Arizona, you know. I'm not an alcoholic. I'll go out there. The only problem is if you're new here, I took myself. Somebody else would have went. It probably would have been nice living out there, you know what I mean? But there Sam was, drunk again all the time. And, you know, no real employment. You know, I had jobs, you know, during college and stuff like that. And my alcoholism was progressing. So I figured I'd get out of Arizona. I went to see my brother. And my brother was a chief resident of psychiatry at Yale University. So I went to see my oldest brother. So I went to see him. He didn't know what the hell was wrong with me. And, you know, I was suffering from alcoholism. Man, I was like, he didn't know. And nobody, you know. So I ended up back in Niagara Falls, and I ended up going into the nut house because I was depressed. My cousin Tony told me to go in the nut house. So I'm there, and after I get out of there, I go down to Florida with my brother and his wife and my girlfriend at the time to rest my nerves. I needed a vacation. I mean, I was a mess. I was just, and I had no idea what the hell was wrong with me. You know, I get right out of the nut house, and I'm drinking, and, you know, they threw me up on some medication, Thorazine, for a month. It was, and I drank on that shit, you know, and it was just crazy. And so what happened, my driving and drinking career started then. I smashed a car. My father loved that car. I ran right into a garbage truck. I was drunk, and it blew up like in the movies. My life go before me, like when I was a kid and all that, all these flat, I had all the glass, and I looked like they had me wrapped up like a hostage, you know. It was like everybody looking, bandages all over me. I was a mess, and then I got a couple more 502s. I lost my license by the time I was 22. I couldn't finish college anymore. I went and enrolled. I just quit. I got all withdrawals. I had no idea what the hell that was happening, what was going on with me, and finally, I went to court in 1973, I got court ordered out of the state of New York. My oldest brother was out here. My other brother, he set up his practice here in San Diego. My other brother was going to law school, and my other brother was in Italy going to medical school, and here was the young son, young, you know, all screwed up. And drunk all the time. So I was supposed to come to San Diego, you know. So instead of coming to San Diego, I went to Vegas because I had a lot of friends there. So I went to Las Vegas for a month, had a lot of fun with my friends, you know. And then when I ran out of money, called Big Brother, got on the plane and came to San Diego. And they're living like in South Mission Beach on the oceanfront. I'm going, wow, this is great, but I don't have a driver's license, so I had to walk to all the bars all the time, you know, which was okay. I mean, it wasn't bad. So now I'm just drinking. And then, you know, and I remember being in a bar, and my brother said to me, "What are you thinking?" He says, "Well, you're thinking is all screwed up." Yeah, so what, you know? Then he mentioned my father. He said, "If the old man knew the way you were living..." I didn't know what the hell was wrong with me. I had to drink. If you're an alcoholic like me, that's the only time I'm feeling any relief is when I'm drinking. And I have no idea I'm going to take that first drink. I'm going to have the next one because I'm alcoholic. I never had one or two drinks in my life. You know, I was trying to control and enjoy it from the onset, but never was able to. So, you know, those are the type of things it says in the book. And if you're new here, I suggest you get a big book. If you can't afford a book, I'll buy the first book. So get a book before you leave and read it. And so time progressed. I ended up in San Diego. And then I got, you know, my story's a lot like Bill. My drive for success was on. Now I'm a business major. I'm a pretty smart guy, but I have no direction, you know. So I got a real estate license, 1974. And I bought some property on the ocean front for my brother, living on the ocean. And, you know, I got a driver's license now. Life is wonderful. And I'm like 20, in my early 20s. And just living life, drunk all the time. You could walk to the bars where I lived. It was wonderful. But me, I like to drink and drive. So within 6 months of being here, I got a 502, whatever you call them, 1975. So my brother got me a lawyer. I got off. Nothing happened. The next year, I got two 502s back-to-back within 2 weeks. Now, this time, I didn't tell my brother because I know he'd be a little pissed off, but I have my own money now, so I can do what I... So I hired a lawyer, this law firm, and I told the lawyer, I says, if this is in 1970, if I got to go to jail, let me know because I'm going back to New York. Now, the problem is Mission Beach, California. So I figured, you know, I got two 502s, so I go back to New York on a business opportunity. I was going to build a racquetball club. And I got this idea, so, you know, I went there, and it was going to be this big racquetball club. And, you know, and I'm drinking, smoking, you know, and we knew this. We got a partner to throw on the land. We're going to do this deal, my brother, and he's bankrolling it. And what happened was I spent a lot of 1977 in New York. And the deal didn't go off the way it was supposed to go off, and I wasn't too happy. But I was retired by the time let me tell you, I bought a real estate franchise in 2000 with a woman I met in real estate school, you know, and we bought this franchise, and I was living in Mission Beach. It was from Mount Helix, if you know that area. And this is, 45 years ago, 40-something years ago, and she used to say, "Hey, Sam, when are you coming to work?" And I would say, I couldn't go to work. I was afraid of people. Did I tell you I was terrified of people? If I wasn't drinking, I couldn't identify, had no self-worth. I had a license, but I just couldn't do stuff. And I could do simple stuff. You tell me, go and make an offer on that house. And I did that. I did like maybe three trans, or go buy that building. I could do it. But if I had to interact with people, I didn't like it. I didn't like it. So first of all, I'm better than that. You know, I had this ego, incredible. I'm a real estate investment counselor. I'm no salesperson. I'm better than, you know, all this crazy nonsense. The reality was a just terrified alcoholic guy that couldn't function well. And so time progressed, and in 1980, I come back to California. I'm here. And I would, whenever something bad would go wrong, I go into depression for a while, you know, maybe a couple weeks. But I drink all. I'm all drunk all the time. And then in about 1980, I had a real good year financially. I was doing real well. And then I was in this neighborhood, not too far from, but I was in Mission Beach, and we had a little Italian restaurant there for a few years, nobody really worked there, but, you know, it was kind of a place. But in the early 80s, I was hanging around with a lot of guys. I was in the nightclub scene, you know, discos and all that. And all my friends, they had businesses, nightclubs, you know, restaurants, a lot of guys I hung around with. And where's mine? You know, I was always saying. So we were going to do a little business down the street, not too far from here. It didn't happen. So I ended up opening a bar in 1983 in Mission Beach. And what happened is at that same time I was opening this bar, I got a 502. And so I got court ordered. I was going to AA meetings and alcohol, and I went to 25 meetings. I never admitted I was alcoholic, you know, because I wasn't an alcoholic. I would have put my hand on the big book. You an alcoholic? No way. Not me. 1984, I went, got my court Within about a year, somebody intervened in my life, was taking me to meetings. This time I started seeing a psychiatrist. And he knew I was alcoholic, but he wouldn't tell me. But he had a friend take me to AA meetings. And I never got sober. So, you know, kind of like with what Kendall was talking about, somebody cared about me enough because I was in a point at this, I was on top of the world, I thought. And my alcohol was at a point, a couple of things happened that were semi-traumatic for me anyway. And I wanted to kill myself. You know, that's where it became. You know, I was a loser, you know. And I had this 502 and nothing happened. They sent me to AA, but I never got sober. In 85, I was going to AA, never got sober. A couple of years, I had a car accident, two more car accidents, one down not too far from here, where I knocked down trees and everything. It was crazy. I was going down probably about a couple miles from here, and I got arrested and threw in the drunk tank. And that time, they didn't send me to AA. They sent me another program. They sent me out to Descanso, and my car was like this. It was terrible. It was like... And nearly killed myself, but I could not connect the fact that I might have had a drinking problem. Drinking was working real good for me, real good. I don't know about you, but it was killing me, but I didn't know. And I couldn't stay away from that first drink. And then I tried to control and enjoy. In the 80s, when I was opening this bar, I got hooked on cocaine. I was trying to get someone off it, a girlfriend of mine, and I ended up getting on it. This is crazy. And then I got in that other substance to control and enjoy my drinking, crystal meth, right? You know that stuff. I drank more. I was insane, 2-3 days at a time. I'm not drinking. I'm not sleeping. It's crazy. And if you did as much as I did, you know, eventually I got busted behind this stuff. And we got raided, and I ended up going to a work furlough. And in 1988 and in 1989, I'm living in this work furlough, and a guy gave me the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and the psychologist. And he said, just say you're an alcoholic. You know, it looked good for the judge before when I was getting court ordered. And just say you're alcoholic or whatever, you know. And so I just said, okay, I'm an alcoholic. Go to AA. Now, I'm on a drug charge. I'm not an alcoholic. But he's telling me to say I'm an alcoholic. So I says, okay. So I'm drinking with my attorney in the bar, and I get ordered to this work furlough for 60 days, and they tell me 90 days. This is crazy. I'm not even guilty. You know what I mean? Are you one of those people that was always somebody else's fault? My whole life, I blamed everybody, my parents, her, brothers, everybody in my life. Anytime anything would go wrong, I had very little part in it. It was them. And so, you know, I was getting away with it up until this point. Then I get court ordered, AA. Now, I'm getting released from the work furlough on April 7th, 1989. You know where I am? I'm in the bar, drinking, the same day. I drank there, I drank a bar there, I drank up the street, not too far from here, 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, I knew all the bars, the people, and I'm going to go to Tijuana or somewhere. I was so drunk I couldn't see. How I got home, I was sick as a dog because I wasn't doing those other substances anymore. And what happened, I got to go to AA because I'm court ordered, so I go to AA down in Pacific Beach. I didn't want to go, so I go to AA meeting down there, and after the meeting, I ended up on the bar stool. I started drinking. Somehow I got home that evening and got on my knees. I said, God help me. And I don't know where a thought came. I was alcoholic. Now, mind you, I started reading this book and that work furlough. I read the whole book almost. I didn't understand it all. The thing I understand in this book, I started making amends to people I had harmed because I knew I was a screw-up. I was hurting people, relatives, you know, friends of mine, and not being responsible. And I made amends to him, but I wasn't an alcoholic. I couldn't admit the first step. And I got court ordered. It was the best thing that ever happened to me. And if you're on a court card, I welcome you because I'm grateful for the court system. Because had they not kept sending me, because I kept getting out. I was finding a way to get out, you know. And they didn't they don't like guys like me driving around drunk all the time. It's not a good thing. And thank God that they intervened. And so I've been sober, and on April 15th, 1989 is my sobriety day. And that's where the third life started. And it's been a ride. You know, a guy couldn't finish anything. I remember I was sober about 9 months, and I talked to this psychologist. I said, you know, I never got my college degree. I wonder what I need to go back. I couldn't put two sentences, so let's write a letter. So we write a letter. I needed 3 classes, because I took college classes here, but not for a degree. So I went back to school, and I finished that. You know, my last class was at San Diego State. I got a business degree. What are you going to do with that? You know, nothing. You know, I still had my real estate license. I had my broker, but they took it away because I had a felony. But and they gave me a restricted real estate sales license. And so I was working a little bit in that and didn't like it too much. And I took a tax class, and I went to UCSD, went back to school, and got an accounting certificate and passed the CPA exam. You know, if you don't drink, if you're new here, I was going to AA meetings. What I've learned, if you don't drink, you don't get drunk, you can do things. And what I learned here, which I never learned before, is sit up front. I started my friend John's over there. He's July 1st, 1990, my parents' birth. Right, John? See, I'm a good numbers guy. And sobriety date, what I learned here is from the men in La Mesa Men's and La Jolla Speakers where I went, my sponsor says, sit up front. Learn how to listen. Because if you're an alcoholic like me, you're always talking. No, you're never listening. You know, like I'll interrupt people. I did that tonight with my friends over here. Sam's Angels over here and three, Laura, Janie, and Ollie. Right, we got three here. And my new friend Lori, and nice to see Pam and Tracy here, and Jess, and you know, so Erica, nah, not the guy next to you. Is that your husband? That guy, Mark? Yeah, that's his name. Yeah, my friend Mark. He's my good friend. I'm kidding. And my friend Charlie over there. I know a lot of people here. Love you all. You know, it's good to be here. So my life started getting better. I started, you know, being a little bit self-supporting through my own contribution. You know, time progressed, and, you know, if you're new here, my felony got expunged. That was a nice thing, you know. But I've always been active in AA over the years. One of the things is, and I was available. I became a good son. I became a good brother. I became a good father. All these good things happened because I was sober, and I was being of service. I wear this pin that says, love and service, you know. And I had the privilege of going there with my daughter a couple years ago to Akron, sitting at Dr. Bob's house on Founders Day. That was wonderful, man. And then I got to go to the fourth game of the Golden State Warriors, Cleveland Cavaliers game. How many boo Cavs won that game? But, you know, one thing is, for a guy that could never get off the bar stool, I was always going places. I just couldn't get there, you know. I just couldn't finish stuff. And then I ended up in 2006, just a couple of things. The guy who was full of fear, he couldn't get in front of people. You ever do that genetic report, 23andMe? It said I didn't have a fear of public speaking because of my genetic. That's not true. I couldn't finish college, one of the classes, because I couldn't do public speaking. I was terrified. If I was drinking, I probably could do it, but not sober. And today they can't shut me up, you know. But, you know, some of the joys, you know, all the promises on page 83 and 84 somewhat have come true in my life. You know, I know a new freedom and a new happiness. I don't regret the past and wish to shut the door on it. I know what serenity feels like. I know peace, you know. I know how my experience can benefit that new guy over there. And those guys, you know, I can tell, share my experience, strength, and hope. I don't have a fear of economic insecurity. I'm not afraid of people anymore. You know, I intuitively somewhat know how to handle situations with me. Ask for help. You know, I got some privileges. I know in 2006, my daughter went to Spain. I sent her there for a month. So I got to go there to see her graduate, and I got to go to AA meetings in Spain. We went to Italy. I went to meetings in Rome, you know, in Italy. And what a deal for a guy who couldn't get off the bar stool. I've been to 5 international conventions, and you know, life is the third lifestyle has been the best by far. By far. And because you know why? I've done these steps. I admitted I had a problem. You know, the first step, you know. I admit I got a problem. I can't run my life. I got to get somebody to run my life, you know. Ask for help. That's all the third step. You ask for help, direction. Ask for sponsors to share their experience, tell them what to do, write an inventory, all the people, you know, where am I at fault? I know all the people I was pissed off at. That's easy. But to look at where I'm selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, and inconsiderate, not me, not me, still them. Took me a long time to get over there, get on this side, you know. That's where the promises come when you start living a life of on the spiritual principles, being honest. Like I said, I was going to be honest. I put my, to the best of my ability, being of service, try to help somebody else, get out of myself, you know. Make those amends to people you aren't harmed, you know. I don't want to do any of that stuff. However, I knew the pain. The pain motivates me to do that stuff. And when I get on the other side, I feel better. That's where the promises come in. It comes in after doing steps 8 and 9. And today I continue to take my inventory. You know, when I'm wrong, well, I don't promptly admit it all the time, but, you know, it takes a while. But I do eventually. Yeah, I know the pain will get enough. I know I'm wrong, you know. I do a little meditation and prayer. You know, I got sent out to Escondido. I got sober here, and I got sent out to Escondido about, I don't know, 12 years ago. I was working for a CPA firm briefly, and I realized, what the hell am I doing in Escondido? Well, things happen, you know, and it's hot out there. And I joke around. I said, I got sent out there for my sins. It's like purgatory. It's hot, you know. And what I realized in time, you know, today I was at a meeting that I started, the Joe and Charlie Audio Big Book Study. I started that meeting almost 5 years ago. It's at a men's recovery place, fellowship. 100 guys live there, and we have an audio big book study, and we have the tapes, and you listen, and you walk in, you get a ticket, you know, no personalities if you get the luck of the draw. And that's my favorite meeting. I'm the audio guy there. And I love that meeting, you know. And then if you're ever in about, I don't know, 8 years ago, I started a meeting. When I was in San Diego, I like to eat. So I used to go to Brother's Restaurant over here, Denny's, you know, to lunch meetings. You know, I like lunch meetings. So I was over there, and I started one in Escondido 8 years ago at Denny's. Now we're at Mike's Barbie. We've got a nice private room. There's 40 people average to go. Their average sobriety is 25 years. A lot of 50, 40 year. Mark knows most of the people to go to that meeting. And it's a great meeting, you know. And then I for a guy that never got up in the morning, I never saw noon, I started a 6:45 a.m. meeting, Daily Reflections. And that's from the book. Somebody was talking about reading the Daily Reflections book or something. And we meet every Monday through Friday, you know. And, you know, AA has to come first above everything, you know. I mean, through AA, that's how I found God. The third step, if you're new here, write a description of your higher power, how God of your understanding. That helped me a lot because I had a punishing God when I came in here, and when I wrote it, it was merciful. And it wasn't, you know, I got a, you know, God loves me, forgives me, you know. I got an unconditional love, and my life's good today, you know. I've done the steps, I do it. You know, and a lot of the people here, I took a service commitment here because you asked. On the weekends, I was feeling a little disconnected. You know, I don't have a regular meeting anymore. And I was here one day, and they said, we need a speaker getter. I could do that, you know. I've done it, you know, three, four times. That's easy for me to do that because I know a lot of people. I've been around 30 years. So I took a commitment at this meeting, and I get to know you people, a lot of the people here on the Roundup Committee, and I invite you. We're having our first meeting July 8th at the rec center. If you want to get involved in service on a big party we have every year at Easter time. See me after the meeting. How much time I got left? I got 2 minutes left. And the last 2 minutes I want to say is a vision for you. You know, and a vision for you, it talks about the 12 steps. They break it down. And it says, you know, abandon yourself to God as you understand God. You know, that's step three. Admit your faults and to your fellow man, steps 4 and 5. Give freely of what you find and join us. You know, here, that's a fellowship, you know. Join us. Become involved. We got a couple commitments we need to be on, to fill up over here. So see Sean after the meetings. You can see me, Jonathan, Kendall. Get involved here. Get involved. And if you like this meeting, get involved. Because if you be like me, you're not going to feel connected to AA unless you're in service. You got to do service. If you don't do service in AA, you're just visiting. That's my experience, because I know how it feels to be uncomfortable. And then once you take the steps, you'll get those promises. But you got to do the service. You got to do all three. You got to do the steps, right? That's recovery. You got to become part of the fellowship. That's unity. And then we have service, like Kendall, my friend over there, is doing. So anyways, I'm just grateful to be here tonight. It's been a pleasure. I hope that if you're new here, that it'll get you to go to another meeting. Come next week, and we'll have a good woman speaker from Escondido. And come and join us and become part of. So I'm grateful to be here. I love you all. Thanks for being allowed to share with you all.